Pope Benedict's new encyclical, Caritas in Veritate, Charity in Truth, was formally introduced at a Vatican press conference Tuesday. It is his third since becoming pontiff in 2005. In a thought-provoking thesis on the challenges to social justice presented by the current economic crisis, Pope Benedict analyzes its probable causes and the need to create a new and more just economic system that promotes the dignity of every human being. As a reaffirmation of Catholic social doctrine in troubled times, it is the first social encyclical to be written by a pontiff in almost two decades and is preceded by John Paul II's Centesimus Annus in 1991. Pope Benedict signed the 144-page encyclical, the most authoritative document issued by a pontiff, on the feast day of Saints Peter and Paul, June 29th. The document, divided up into six chapters, is available in English, Italian, Spanish, French, German, and Portuguese. The chapters include reflections on human development in the current era, fraternity, economic development, and civil society, the development of people, rights, and duties, and the environment, cooperation of the human family, and the development of peoples and technology.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, è ormai prossima la pubblicazione della mia terza enciclica, che ha per titolo Caritas in Veritate.
Speaking after the Angelus prayer in St. Peter's Square, June 29th, Pope Benedict explained that he had drawn inspiration for his encyclical from the social themes laid out in Pope Paul VI's Populorum Progressio. Indeed, the very first chapter of Caritas in Veritate is dedicated to what Benedict describes as the message of Pope Paul's 1967 encyclical.
Riprendendo le tematiche sociali contenute nella Populorum Progressio, scritta dal servo di Dio Paolo VI nel 1967.
Pope Benedict said Caritas in Veritate aims to go deeper in certain aspects of the integral development of our age in the light of charity in truth.
Dello sviluppo integrale nella nostra epoca alla luce della carità della verità. Affido alla vostra preghiera questo ulteriore contributo.
I entrust to your prayers, the Pope said, this new contribution that the Church offers to humanity in its commitment to sustainable progress, in full respect of human dignity and the real needs everyone has.
Nel pieno rispetto della dignità umana e delle reali esigenze di tutti.
The real needs everyone has. In today's frenetically consumerist shop-till-you-drop society, how often do we stop to think, do I really need this? In Caritas in Veritate, Benedict is asking us to really reflect on our basic needs and on the needs of others, especially those truly in need, those whose very existence may depend on our willingness to give up a few things we don't, in fact, really need. In his encyclical, the Pope asks us to adopt new lifestyles in which the quest for truth, beauty, goodness, and communion with others for the sake of common growth are the factors which determine consumer choices, savings, and investments. In a letter to Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi ahead of the July G8 summit in earthquake-struck Aquila, the Pope previewed many of the themes outlined in his encyclical. He appealed to G8 member states not to forget the needs of developing nations, which are not to blame for the crisis, but stand to suffer the most from it. He urged them to maintain and boost development aid, not in spite of the crisis, but precisely because this is one of the main solutions to it. He also told them not to exclude Africa and the least developed nations from global decision-making. In Caritas in Veritate, Benedict laments the growing inequalities between rich and poor. The dignity of the individual and the demands of justice, writes the Pope, require that economic choices do not cause disparities in wealth to increase in an excessive and morally unacceptable manner, and that we continue to prioritize the goal of access to steady employment for everyone. Charity demands justice, says the Pope, recognition and respect for the legitimate rights of individuals and peoples. Justice, he writes, must be applied to every phase of economic activity, because this is always concerned with man and his needs. Locating resources, financing production, consumption, and all the other phases in the economic cycle inevitably have moral implications, he says. Thus, every economic decision has a moral consequence. The Pope argues that man has been led to abuse the economic process in what he describes as a thoroughly destructive way because of the conviction that the economy must be autonomous and thus shielded from the influence of a moral character. But in the long term, he writes, these convictions have led to economic, social, and political systems that trample upon personal and social freedom and are therefore unable to deliver the justice that they promise. Governments must play an important part in assuring a socially just society. Grave imbalances are produced, writes the Pope in his encyclical, when economic action, conceived merely as an engine for wealth creation, is detached from political action, conceived as a means for pursuing justice through redistribution. In his letter to the Italian premier, the Pope called on G8 leaders to reform the international financial architecture to avoid the kind of speculative operations blamed for the current economic crisis. In Caritas in Veritate, he goes further. Profit, he writes, is useful if it serves as a means towards an end. But once profit becomes the exclusive goal, if it is produced by improper means and without the common good as its ultimate goal, it risks destroying wealth and creating poverty. The Pope urged G8 leaders to take ethically motivated measures to curb the global downturn, with an eye to creating new jobs and ensuring families and businesses access to loans and cash, especially in poor regions. He also urged leaders to improve access to education and to work to create a fair international trade system by completing the stalled Doha round of world trade talks. Well, in Caritas in Veritate, the Pope laments that globalization has made us neighbors, but not made us brothers. True development of peoples depends above all, the Pope writes, on a recognition that the human race is a single family, working together in true communion, not simply as a group of subjects who happen to live side by side. Such developments, the Pope notes, must rescue people from hunger, deprivation, endemic diseases, and illiteracy. Even the factory worker in America could find comfort in Pope Benedict's words about employment in his encyclical, which calls for the kind of jobs that express the essential dignity of every man and woman. Such work enables the worker to be respected and free from any form of discrimination. Work, the Pope says, that makes it possible for families to meet their needs and provide schooling for their children, without the children themselves being forced into labor. Work that permits the workers to organize themselves freely and to make their voices heard. Work that leaves enough room for rediscovering one's roots at a personal, familial, and spiritual level. Work that guarantees those who have retired a decent standard of living. The Holy Father's encyclical also supports what he calls a political, juridical, and economic order, which can increase and give direction to international cooperation for the development of all peoples in solidarity. To manage the global economy, to revive economies hit by the crisis, to avoid any deterioration of the present crisis, and the greater imbalances that would result, to bring about integral and timely disarmament, food security, and peace, to guarantee the protection of the environment, and to regulate migration. For all this, writes Pope Benedict, there is urgent need of a true world political authority. Well, to know more about this encyclical and what it says, Veronica Scarisbrick sat down with Stefano Zamagni, professor of political economy at Italy's University of Bologna and consultor of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. He was one of Pope Benedict's principal economic advisors for the drafting of the encyclical.
Professor Stefano Zamagni, it's a document which contextualizes the principles already outlined in other social encyclicals by other popes, obviously, such as Populorum Progressio and Centesimus Annus. This third encyclical of Benedict XVI is addressed to Catholics the world over, and it goes by the title of Charity in Truth. That's the translation, the official translation. First of all, shouldn't it be Love in Truth?
Yes, in a sense, but charity, it's a word coming from Greek. Charis, in Greek, means grace. Love, on the other hand, it's a word coming from Latin. So, ultimately, it doesn't make that much a difference. Depends. It's like morality and ethics. Morality, it's a Latin word. Ethics is a Greek word. I think that caritas is, especially in these days, a much, let's say, stronger word than love. Also, because love can be easily misunderstood. As we know, there are three different levels of love. Sentimental love, friendship love, and agape. Now, agape, which is another Greek word, which means the ultimate stage of caritas or love.
In your opinion, then, why did the Pope wish to highlight charity and truth, then? They've always been at the heart of the social doctrine of the Catholic Church. So what's new?
What's new, as we know, in the history of philosophical thought, there are two traditions. One is connected to Plato. The other one started with Aristotle. To Plato, Plato affirmed the primacy of the truth and of the just over the good. Aristotle said the opposite, the primacy of the good upon justice and truth. Now, the title of this encyclical wants to stress the Aristotelian, Augustinian, and Thomistic tradition, which means that for the Catholics or for the Christians, the search of the truth is fundamental, provided that it is targeted to love, to charity. Otherwise, we run the risk of rationalistic behavior, like those who are looking for the truth with no connection with the good of people.
What strikes you most about this encyclical, first of all?
Two things. The first one, it's a thorough and, I would say, deep analysis of that phenomenon which is called globalization. And in particular, its appendix, which is called financialization of the economy connected to the present crisis. Why it is deep and thorough? Because it does not dedicate, as it is obvious, to technicalities. It's not the target to the Pope to do that, but tries to understand what lies at the bottom of the many disappointing elements of the present globalization phenomenon. The second element of novelty which struck me is the attempt to go behind the present economic organization of our society. The Pope does not simply try to defend mankind from the current, let's say, challenges, etc., but indicates a way out, and the way out is to recuperate the concept of the market economy as a civil endeavor, not necessarily to be confused with the capitalistic. In other words, the market economy is the genus. The capitalistic market economy is a species, which is contingent, historically contingent. And that is, in my opinion, it's of fundamental importance, because most scholars, even within the economic circle, keep on confusing the two. So if you attack capitalists, the consequence is you have to attack the market economy. The Pope says no, not necessarily, because the fact that capitalism today is in a deep crisis does not mean that the market economy, which was created much before capitalism, because the market economy started at least three centuries before the emergence of the capitalistic mode of production. The only point is that you have to operate within the market economy and inside the market economy in such a way as to generate common good. In conclusion, the Pope for the first time makes clear what is the difference between the civil market and the capitalistic market. A civil market is targeted at the common good. Capitalistic market is targeted as the total good. Total good means profit motive, profit maximization. And so that is why the Pope reminds us that today, those who conceive the economic game or the economic endeavor as if the only target where the profit maximization are obsolete, culturally obsolete, and out of this obsolescence, the major disasters which we are observing follow.
In the first chapter, the Pope speaks about Paul VI's encyclical Populorum Progressio. Why do you think he does that, given our model of development today is a far cry from the 1960s? As you said, it's a time of globalization recent financial...
That is something economic. Which many people will be surprised of, because in the last, let's say, 10, 15 years, many people in different parts of the world were betting on the fact that the Pope would, in a sense, not contradict, but would have discontinued the tradition introduced by Paul VI. The opposite is true. Benedict XVI says, I am on that line of thought and I want to update it, complete, etc. Why is that so? Because development is a word which pertains to the social doctrine of the Church. That is what most people perhaps do not understand. The concept of development started in the 12th century, time when Europe is the time which is called by the historian the renovation of Europe, 12th century, when the commercial society started. Before, the concept of development did not exist. So that is why in these days, when there are people in different parts of the world talking about the so-called décroissance in French, namely the theory of reducing or even making growth at a negative rate, is opposed by the Pope. Because development by itself, it's a good word. Development means freeing the human beings from the shackles of misery, of bad health condition, etc. So by itself, development, it's one of the major contribution of the social doctrine of the Church already from the 12th century on. So the first chapter of the encyclical says the tradition of my predecessors, John Paul II, and also in particular Paul VI, I feel myself following that tradition.
In the face of the present critical scenario of social development, which often offers interconnected negative elements such as financial activities that are mainly speculative, a lack of policies regarding migration, exploitation of natural resources, what vision does Benedict XVI suggest for the future? Does he speak more of respecting rules and regulations already in place or finding new ways to address this present critical scenario?
I would say the second, because the Pope says the problems of a globalized economic world cannot be solved only at the national level. We need a global governance. But, that is important, the global governance should be subsidiary, and polyarchic. Polyarchic means a plurality of the centers of decision power, etc. Subsidiarity is the concept which was introduced many centuries ago by the social doctrine of the Church, about which everybody now is aware. Not to mention the fact that the European Constitution or the European Treaty explicitly talk about the principle of subsidiarity. To be concrete, what does it mean that? It means that, for instance, referring to the migratory issue, we need a world organization of migration. In other words, we have created, not a long time ago, the World Trade Organization, which is okay, it is important. Why not creating a World Migration Organization or World Organization for Migration? In other words, the Pope says, is it the case that goods, commodities, are more important than human beings? Because human beings today, they move freely from one continent to the other, from the country. Unless we create an international agency endowed with the proper, let's say, power and the proper resources, there will be no way. Now, we are observing that nowadays, each country tries to solve the migratory problem by itself. That is an illusion, and it's provoking major dangers, more dangers than benefits. The other is a world organization for environment. How can we possibly keep on talking about maintaining the environment, anti-pollution, unless we create an agency which is capable of enforcing the treaty which have been freely signed by the different countries?
Benedict XVI, in the third chapter, also points to the role of the state. He talks of a civilization of economy. What does he mean by that in the context of the globalized economy?
Within economic thought, there are two major paradigms. One is the political economy paradigm associated to the Anglo-Saxon world. Adam Smith is the guru, the most important figure of the political economy paradigm. The other paradigm is called the civil economy paradigm, and that is much older. And the civil economy paradigm started at the time of the humanism and Renaissance, and had many developed throughout Europe, even in countries different from Tuscany or Italy, where it was born, etc. Where is the difference? The difference is that the political economy paradigm, Adam Smith's argument, is based on two basic principles, exchange of equivalents and redistribution. The civil economy adds to those two a third principle, which is the principle of reciprocity. Now, I keep on telling my students, try, enter a library, whatever. Take any book whatsoever in economics. Look at the index at the end of the book. If you are able to find the word, the lexicon, reciprocity, you win the bet with me. I am always the winner. The point is that the word and the concept, and not to mention the practice of reciprocity, has been literally expelled from the economic jargon. Now, what the Pope says is we have to go back to basics. In other words, to recuperate the principle of reciprocity inside economics, not outside. And in fact, who are talking today about reciprocity? Sociologists, anthropologists, political scientists. The Pope says you economists, both, let's say, scholars and policymakers, you should find ways to implement, translating into practice, the principle of reciprocity.
And a warm thanks there to Stefano Zamagni, professor of political economy at Italy's University of Bologna and consultor of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. He was speaking there with my colleague Veronica Scarisbrick.